Yeah, that was epic. But I think your whole life goes epic. You got about 50, is it 1,500 songs you have out now, or 1,500 songs?
No,
right?
You see, you're overrating me.
Oh, well,
1,358.
Only 1,358. Oh, you got a ways to go, my friend.
I know.
Oh my gosh, so many albums, and I just, if people want to really ever see, not only an album, you have this thing about when you do a piece, you do like a book. You do like a book that goes with each one. And I mean, it's intense with pictures and stories and the reasons and the history and everything behind it as well. It's a lot of work. And you just uploaded your last epic adventure. You just did that a few days ago, right?
Yeah, so you know, I did it today.
Oh.
I actually just uploaded a lot of stuff. I uploaded over 16 hours of music, not music, but 16 hours of audiobook today to the findawayvoices.com at your suggestion.
Mm-hmm.
And I also uploaded the 135 minutes that comprise Stormwork Chapter 89, Worlds Within the World. Now, I want to take a little second here to analyze the word epic, because you use that a couple times, and it's probably one of the most misused words today.
Uh-oh.
And if you, because people associate, well, it's epic if it's big, or mm-hmm. or it's epic if it's, you know, something spectacular. But the actual definition of epic has to do with heroism, and it has to do with honoring heroes.
Hmm.
And heroes are defined as people who lay down their lives for, you know, higher whatever, you know. Hmm. I can't throw all of that into. There's many people who are heroes, like Roberto Clemente is a hero to me.
Mm-hmm.
And of course all the veterans are heroes to me. So by that definition, yes, indeed, these are epic works.
Yes,
because they're all about heroism.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are. And you have a passion for history. So, and when you find a thread, as historians do, historians seem to have an ability, almost like what people do when they go through DNA strands. You know, you have to find out more about that strand, who was this and who was that. And you seem to do that with all of your fascinating adventures, including this last one to Luxembourg, where I have to say it was quite an amazing sink, as far, and that's S-Y-N-C, not S-I-N-K. But it was amazing how you went there, and you did find out that a relative of yours was buried there in Luxembourg.
Yeah.
And he died at a young age. Was it about 22 or 23 when he died?
20.
20, my God. And you were smart enough to get someone who was in the band that played the music to come and do photographs. He happened to be a very good photographer.
Excellent photographer. He was the staff photographer for the Luxembourg military band. And when I went there, you know, I always debate whether I should bring my good camera, because I really don't want to take pictures on the iPhone. So I say, well, if I go with my good camera, the problem is then I'll either be taking pictures or I'll be doing the work.
Yeah.
And, of course, the work always wins, so the camera stays behind. But when I went to Luxembourg on this trip, you see, in 2003, I had done a film score that was made in Luxembourg. The film, Retrograde, starring Dolph Lundgren, was made in Luxembourg.
Hmm.
And the film's director visited the American Military Cemetery, and he found a cross with the name Dominic H. Melillo Jr. on it. Now, that's basically it. I knew that he was a distant relative, the son of my great-grandfather's brother. And so he was a first-generation American, and he fought with Patton, which means that he fought against Italians.
Mm-hmm.
He eventually, now listen to this one, this will really get you. He was killed in the same place where the concert was given.
It's amazing.
Now I didn't know that going into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know a bunch of stuff going into Luxembourg. For instance, I wrote all this music that all deals with the souls of heaven and Beethoven's soul as he speaks to us from heaven. And this whole idea of souls, and there's a tuba concerto called The Strong Soul. And it's all about facing stuff. It's like being David in the battle against Goliath. And it's all, the whole idea of that album is to give people their own personal heroes themes to face their challenges so that they could be heroes, because that's a choice, right? You choose to be a hero. So when I went to Luxembourg, I was like, well, we have to make a pilgrimage to the American Military Cemetery, and this time, with a good photographer, find that cross and take pictures of us, Colonel Jean-Claude Brown, and I, by that cross. So we had talked about it all during the stay there. We did the concert on the 24th, and we recorded some spots. We recorded the tuba concerto on Monday, and then we recorded some spots on Tuesday. And then on the 28th, we went to, this was my last day in Luxembourg, by the way, we went to the American Military Cemetery. Well, like I said, I thought we were going to go find this cross and take photographs. When we went there, the colonel started speaking in Luxembourgish to the curator and let her know what we were doing. And she said, let me see what I can find on Dominic Melillo, and I'll have it for you when you get back. Well, we went out, we took the pictures, and we came back, and she said, and she handed, I thought she was going to give me a single piece of paper. Yeah, this is what we know about your, you know, your uncle, your great uncle. He was this, he was that. He was in the 5th Infantry Division, 46th Artillery. He was a radio operator. He died here in Dunkirk. I thought that it was going to be that kind of a thing. The very first thing I saw when I went in there, she pulled me into her office, and there on the computer screen, I mean, this is just like, it's overwhelming to me, was a picture of Dominic Melillo, his high school yearbook picture, when he was 18 years old. And I looked at that picture, and a lot of things came into me at that time, just the way they're doing now, the big chills. I could tell you this, he looked like one of my sons.
And he looks like you. Just, you can see that he also has your looks. I could see that immediately when I saw that picture
it's
you posted.
Just absolutely mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Now, since then, I've resurrected that picture and put it through AI and upgraded it, and it's just stunning what that photograph has become. And I also know that no one in my family, and I'll bet you no one on that distant side of the family, has ever seen those pictures. There's so many interesting things connected to it. Then I saw a picture of him in a basketball uniform. And he played basketball on a high school team. And there were talks about him, how he loved pizza. And, you know, he grew up in East Haven and probably no doubt went to New Haven, went to Pepe's Pizza, just where we all grew up and went to go get for pizzas. And so there was this huge sudden connection, which was just beyond my normal historic observation and love of these people. This was like DNA. And the photographer actually said, you know, you should write a piece. He's a bass clarinetist, by the way. He said, you should write a piece about this, because on our Memorial Day, we're going, we have a clarinet quartet, three B-flat clarinets and a bass clarinet, and we always play something at the Memorial Day. And I looked at him and said, don't even say another word. When I got back, I didn't even unpack. And I wrote a piece called In You, I Live Again.
I wish I had it to play right now.
It was me trying to say to Dominic, don't worry, Dominic, you're not forgotten. You're going to live again in my memory and in the memory of my family. And so now I wrote that piece for them, and they're going to play it at their Memorial Day service, and they're going to give it to the U.S. ambassador.
Wow. You know, that's the kind of magic that can happen. I mean, just as a side note, I mean, I have found that many people who are doing DNA now are actually going back to Europe or going to places that they had some distant family members, and do find some connection There are, you know, I forget the name of that great show that talks about DNA and talks about the family members. And sometimes you can see the eyes or some features that kind of relate back to you. And it does, and it's so beautiful that you titled In You, I Live Again. And if anyone knows Stephen Melillo's work, or if you don't know his work, maybe especially, you can go to your wonderful website. And there's so much there. You can actually see the pictures. You can hear the stories. You have so much that you have up there. It's like, well, talk about a book. It's an encyclopedia of Stormworks of sorts, right? Isn't it? I mean, it's so much there.
Well, you know, it's called the Stormworks albums are called chapters.
Mm-hmm.
And that was another first that happened on this trip to Luxembourg. I got to explain to the audience, and see, this is all from you, believe. You're the person who inspired me to do this. I got in front of the audience, and rather than just playing the pieces, which, like, that's normally what I do,
mm-hmm.
right? If I'm conducting an all-state band or I'm conducting an honor band, I might say something about the kids, you know, I thank people, that sort of thing. But I really don't really talk about what led me to writing that music, right? Because it's not, I would never talk about the music, but I would talk about what led me to writing it.
The inspiration.
So here I was on this on this opportunity, and I took a microphone, and I walked into the audience, and I said, I never had the chance to do this before. I'm going to tell you what a Stormworks chapter is. And because we're actually going to play all the music from the Stormworks chapter live. This is going to be a live recording. The first time I'm making a live recording of a Stormworks album. And so I just said to the audience, look, think of each piece not as a piece, but as a paragraph, as one part of an interconnected story. So that by the time you get to the end, and I told them about how the Navajo drum starts on the first paragraph of
mm-hmm.
The Souls of Heaven and how it ends in the last movement of Beethoven,
mm.
right? I told them all about all these little things to listen for. And I said, and by the time you get to the end, you'll realize, wow, we just took part in a chapter. And then someday in the future, when you go discover the other Stormworks chapter, what are you going to discover? A novel,
mm.
because all of these chapters are interconnected. They're done that, you know, it's done with theme, with motif, with you know, just stylistic things, orchestrational things. All of these things are connected into this one large message. And the message is very simple. It's why it's called Stormworks, because a storm is what people face. That's life. And you're going to face the darkness, and you're going to face slaps in the face, and you're going to be kicked to the ground, and all this. But at the end of every storm, there's light. And so it's this whole message of hope and light. And ultimately, like Beethoven, the brotherhood of man.
And that is the, and of course, thank you for all of that with Beethoven, the brotherhood of man. Is timeless, and often it gets played at places like the UN or places where there is the end of a war, you know, or there is a moment that needs something more. And then at that point, you reach for that. What you did is the message from Beethoven, which you had back. But going back to that lovely piece you did for your relative, Dominic, beautiful piece, beautiful, beautiful piece. And you can go to your website if people want to follow that journey and follow this amazing concert, because you always do such great concerts. I side note here, when you think of band music, you cannot ever comprehend what your music that you do for band is. You have changed the meaning of what people may think of as band music. It's symphonic music. For a
band.
Well,
you know what? You just have to just change the wording a little bit.
Yeah.
And you say, well, instead of writing band music, Steve's writing music for mm-hmm. band.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's great music. It's not just music. It is so powerful because what it does, I feel, when I've heard your musicians and your bands do these pieces, that they feel like they're finally getting an opportunity to expand what they wanted to do with their music that had been maybe limited to band music?
Well, it depends. It depends on the conductors, and it depends on the organization, which is a function of the conductor. So a conductor that has the right vision, right, will go forward and make this stuff happen. And mm-hmm. But other people are very comfortable with, you know, the normal way that band music is done.
Mm-hmm.
They're comfortable with that because it's easy. You get to wake up in the morning and, you know.
Yeah, standard stuff.
I had a roommate one time. He said, hey, man, you know all this. We were working together in a school. He was one of the band directors, and I was the other band director. And he said to me, you know this philosophy stuff you're always talking about to the kids? I go, yeah. He goes, well, why do you do that? I go, what do you mean? He goes, why do you talk about all these philosophical things and all these spiritual things and all the? I go, because that's what music is. And he goes, I don't think of music that way. He goes, well, what do you think of it as? And he said, well, music is just something you clean up.
Whoa.
And I said, no, your room is something you clean up. But not music. Music is, I actually emptied myself a little bit and poured myself out there in the libretto mm-hmm. that I also uploaded today.
Yes.
It's a 66-page libretto. And it's, and by the way, the number 66, that's all totally on purpose because it coincides with my age.
Uh-huh.
It coincides with the 66 books of the Bible. It coincides with all of these different things that are on purpose. And then there's all these unintentional consequences
yeah.
that came out of this libretto. It's mostly pictures, so people really shouldn't be afraid of it. But it's an outpouring, and it's an expression of why I do what I do and what I believe will come from it.
I think because of this, and it's stormworld.com, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not Stormworks, because people get confused. It's stormworld.com where you can find all this. But I think when you do expand your horizon and you expand beyond definitions, what may people think cleaning up music is cleaning up your room. But when you expand it, you're giving those musicians a chance to expand their horizons. And from what I heard of the music of it, those musicians in Luxembourg and the military band there loved it. They ate it up. They got it. It sounded like they really loved it, and it changed their perspectives as well. Didn't you sense that?
Yes, and maybe for the first time, 100%. I felt 100% from the musicians and 100% from the audience. It was definitely a top experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But wait till you hear. You haven't heard it yet, though. Wait till you hear it now that it's finished.
Mm. I've heard just a little excerpts. Yeah. I can't wait to hear.
I just played you little tiny little snippets with, you know, from the hall the first day I walked in. Wait till you hear it. It's unbelievable. And then, of course, the fact that it's live,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you hear the audience just go crazy. There were so many amazing moments during that concert. I was talking to the audience about the piece of Requiem of Two Poems,
mm-hmm.
which I wrote hours before the Ukraine was invaded.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now unbeknownst to me, I'm delivering this piece on the 2-year anniversary. It's 24 February, only it's now 2024. And I didn't even realize it at the time.
Mm.
So I'm talking to the audience. I'm explaining to them how this piece came about. And I go to turn to the band. And I open the score. And I remembered, oh, I forgot something. So I take the microphone and I go off the stage to show people the score. And in the score, I have that picture from the director of the film that was shot in Luxembourg in 2003, of the Dominic Melillo gravesite. So I'm walking through the audience, and I'm going, does anybody know what this is? Does anybody recognize this? And, oh, God, Cindy, I have chills in my body. This guy, he got all emotional. He goes, I know what it is. I know it. And he's, like, crying.
Wow.
And he goes, I know what that is. And he goes, God bless you, sir. And I walk over to him, and I hug him, and I say,
wow,
God bless you. And you can hear the whole audience, like, hush, like that. And they went, oh. And it was like, and then it was this incredible moment. And then he said, I represent the 27th Division of Patton.
Wow.
And I was like,
wow.
What? And it's like, wait a minute. And you know, like, I wish that I could be surprised by miracles, but I'm no longer surprised by them. I sort of like look for them around every corner. But later on, we took a picture, he and I, on the stage.
Wow. So there was that connection from beyond the grave of Dominic representing Patton dying, and this man who also had the representation of Patton meeting there in Luxembourg, which would be impossible to try to figure out and arrange if you were going to try to orchestrate that of sorts. But the divine
right.
orchestration was at work, obviously, you know. And to be able to have this in a live concert. Now, you know, and I know, there are many people that know when you have a live concert, magic happens. Because you have those musicians that you're conducting, right? They're getting the energy from you, the passion that you're feeling for the piece as the person who writes it. Not just a conductor of any piece, but you are conveying what you felt when you wrote this to people. I imagine some of them may not even speak English, but they didn't have to. The music was universal, and they could feel it through the music, you know. And they were able to expand what they could play because they felt what you felt. I mean, that's what a great conductor does, you know. I mean, that's, you could see it in Leonard Bernstein and so many other great conductors, is they convey that energy, that magic of the music, you know. And to be able to do that in a live concert, you know, and I think you only had like three rehearsals of the piece?
No, I had 4 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Total.
Wow.
To rehearse the entire album of music.
Wow, only 4 hours? My God. Whoa.
Yeah, it's good to work with pros.
Well, it was because of what I experienced recently.
Was,
you were delayed in Switzerland because of a train strike or something, weren't you, for like 8 hours?
No, the Lufthansa strike. I had a long layover in Zurich, and so that made me get there late. But I just walked in. I walked in right from, you know, the airport into the rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
And then one of the guys of the percussionist, he told me later, he said, we couldn't figure out why you weren't tired.
Right. I know. And so I thought it was like a few days of rehearsal. So you only had 4 hours, and they were able to get it enough, you know, where they could do that. And there is an extra pressure. When you know you're recording something live, you know, there's that extra adrenaline, right? Because you know you have to do it, right? Because that's that live moment.
Right. Well, we didn't record the tuba concerto live because the tuba player who came from Germany, that's an 18-minute piece.
Oh, my gosh.
And so there really wasn't a way to work that in because it's very sophisticated.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, wait till you hear the tuba player on that. He's astounding, okay? And when you hear him on, we recorded him on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So that piece wasn't recorded live, but we couldn't do that on the concert for several reasons, because then the concert would be too long.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have enough time really to rehearse everything else.
Well, from what I heard, it was magical. And the truth is, it's not easy, as you know, it's not easy to mic these things. You don't know about the acoustics and the acoustics in the hall.
Yeah,
I mean that's a lot of work, just to mic it correctly. And each instrument has a different way of affecting a mic, et cetera, you know, and how that all works, you know. So when is it going to be available for people to listen to?
Well, I just uploaded it to CD Baby today.
Oh, good luck.
And I'm not sure exactly when.
Yeah,
it, you know how long it takes.
Yeah.
But I gave it the 18th as the official release date.
Wow.
Because that's the birthday of my personal hero, Miklos Roja.
And that's you know what you worked on that piece in the hands of God. That April 18th is my sister's birthday.
See.
Yeah, yeah. And you did such a beautiful job on that album, which I did in tribute to my sister after she passed away. And I didn't know how to, you know, express her. She was a concert flautist. I didn't quite know how to express my feelings for her, but in that album, In the Hands of God, it with your arrangements and your beautiful work on that, along with Father Carell, Pete Van Eden, it was just so touching for anyone who's had someone pass on. So April 18th is very special as well. And I hope CD Baby can do it. You never know these days with CD Baby because you can't talk to anyone anymore. CD Baby, why can't you talk to anyone anymore?
Their new thing is that if you put it in a classical genre, that you can't put it up on YouTube or any of these other things.
Gosh.
And which I find fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I sent them an email saying, well, every other Stormworks chapter is up on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Uh-oh, watch out.
I guess the rules keep changing. The goalposts keep shifting.
They do, basically. We only have 2 minutes left. And I have to, for clarity's sake, I just reached out to Stephen about 20 minutes before this interview because I had a cancellation. But Stephen was so kind, and I did end up having a layover because it turned out the layover was a canceled flight. But I had about 6 hours to kill, and I always get inspired talking to Stephen. So I was there talking my head off to Stephen, who's also on the East Coast. So I knew it wouldn't be too late that evening while I was at EWR waiting. And I just started getting amazed again by the story. So I just called him. I texted him, actually, just about 20, 30 minutes. And I also know you know how to express the beauty of music, the power of music, the gift of music. And you were able somehow to reach out to these beautiful people in Luxembourg. And I really think that it's a memory they will always have. It's something that I think they will always cherish. And they will be on this album, which is going to be wonderful. And the Lit Aware, I only have 30 seconds, the Lit Award said, your music fits into a category. They had to create a category for music. There was no category they had that could fit your kind of music.
I loved it.
It's true. It's true. So I thank you very much, my friend. And I'm looking forward, really looking forward to hearing that. And people can go to stormworld.com. You have so much up there that people can discover that is such a gift.
Go to the resources and Storm Aficionados menu item and go to Digital Libretti and download the Stormworks Chapter 89 digital libretto that I just put up today.
I will. And God bless you and a big aloha.
Mm-hmm. Okay, aloha.